Leeds just clear it anywhere. Happy with the point at this stage, I think. It's 2-2, but for the even snatcher winner. Cantona's racing on. Gale in there. He's kneaded up. He's headed it over. It's gone in. It's 3-2. The most remarkable goal. And it could just decide the championship.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Are you jubilant, Jan Bilton, today, or are you a little bit, you know, a bit uncertain? Because obviously Sunderland have made it to the playoffs again. Second time in the playoffs in the last four seasons. Seasons that Sunderland have been in League One. The only time they didn't get to the playoffs was in the curtailed season of 2020. So, third time lucky then?
Hope so. I think so as well. Yes, I was really pleased. To be honest with you, it wasn't that much of a nail biter because, you know, the biggest result of the day was MK Dons absolutely thrashing Plymouth, which meant for us, we were winning 1-0. I mean, we were fine. So it wasn't a real nail biter. So actually, I was watching it and I was quite relaxed, which is nice for once. But once it became obvious that we were going to make it, I actually watched I'm turning into a hipster here, you'd be pleased to hear. I watched a League One relegation battle with some gusto and massively enjoyed it because Gillingham were at the fourth bottom, and they needed a result against Rotherham. And Rotherham winning 1-0. And that also meant that Rotherham wouldn't have gone up automatically if they hadn't got the result. Gillingham just needed a better Fleetwood score, and it was all happening at the last minute. So I actually drifted onto that, if I'm honest with you, because I was in my pipe and slippers. I was that happy about it. But yeah, it's going to be great. It really is going to be great. Definitely for the neutral as well, playing Sheffield Wednesday on Friday, which I have to juggle with my daughter's birthday party, but I'm going to make it happen. Sunderland lost 3-0 at Hillsborough earlier in the season, and on the return fixture, we beat them 5-0. I think we'll probably end up playing MK Dons in the final, assuming we get through, if we can get through, which I think will be a tough one. But apart from the last game where they came out, you know, really on top, they haven't had it all their own way in the run-in. They lost out on automatic promotion and it was their own fault. So if they're prone to shooting themselves in the foot or doing a Sunderland, as I think it's called, then they can do it instead of us. The short answer is yes, I am elated.
Well, yeah, MK Dons looked amazing against Plymouth. They really did take them apart. But yeah, interesting you say that about results between Wednesday and Sunderland. Yeah, because like two very one-sided games, weren't they?
Yeah.
So very difficult to know how their two-leg semi-finals are going to go. But MK Dons beat Wickham home and away. They did the double over them, I think 1-0 both times. So obviously Wickham are going to go through to the final then, aren't they, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, MK Dons are doing away ticket allocation shenanigans as well. They're doing the bare minimum with their away ticket shenanigans for the playoff, which has got the Wickham fans all hot and bothered as well. Wickham's form going into the playoffs is better than MK Dons. And the fact that they've lost twice suggests to me that they will not lose the third time. They will actually beat MK Dons. That and the hubris that comes from away ticket shenanigans and the fact that MK Dons are just awful says to me that Wickham will be in the playoff final against Sunderland, and Sunderland will win.
Well,
but Sunderland and Wickham have got the best records in the last five games in that playoff. So for me, it's Sunderland and Wickham in the final, Clive, and Sunderland to go through.
And Sunderland have been in a Wembley final more recently, albeit no one was there. So there's some players that where they maybe won't be as overawed as Wickham.
True. But you can't underestimate Gareth Ainsworth's Wickham. They've also won a Wembley player final recently, and they are not to be trifled with. I mean, I'm still going with Sunderland, but a Sunderland team that goes out there saying, "We've got this, lads, it's Wickham," is doomed.
Sunderland can never go to Wembley and I would never underestimate anybody who dresses like a cowboy.
Gareth Ainsworth is a magnificent human being and a fantastic manager, and I would be very happy for him if Wickham were to be promoted under normal circumstances. But these being abnormal circumstances, it's against Sunderland, you know. Of course, it will be Wednesday versus McDonald's in the final, and no one will watch it.
Well, it is lovely to talk about the EFL on the podcast, and I think we should extend this discussion because today is a very, very important day because it's 30 years. We're recording this on Monday, the 2nd of May, and it's 30 years since the last old First Division game. And if you're interested in knowing, yes, Arsenal beat Southampton 5-1.
So Southampton were even getting shoe-ins handed out even then.
But yes, 30 years now of the Premier League. On that day, relegated out of the top flight and out of the Premier League were Luton Town and Notts County, both of whom subsequently have left the Football League. But Luton could be, I mean, they're currently losing at the moment 2-0 to Fulham, but could be on their way back. They could be in the playoffs themselves. Terry, talking about away ticket shenanigans, is all forgiven with Luton Town now? Are they allowed back in the top flight, do you think?
Just about, yeah. Luton have had to suffer greatly for what is, let's face it, the misdeeds of their owners rather than necessarily their fans. Although, I don't know, there are some people who might take a different view about that. But for those people who aren't as old as us, back in the day, Luton were a bit of a pariah of a football club because they banned away supporters from their stadium for a period of years during the 1980s. Their chairman was a Tory MP called David Evans, and he took umbrage after a particularly unpleasant game, in fairness, between Luton and Millwall, in which seats may have been thrown around and there may have been pitch invasions and there was unpleasantness. And he took umbrage and he banned away fans. They also had the plastic pitch. Back in the days, you know, not like modern free 4G pitches now, which are glorious things and not enough clubs have them. But back then, they were not a leveler at all. That was just cheating, frankly. It was cheating. And also David Evans was the guy who conceived the idea of the football fan ID card, if you remember that.
Oh, God.
They bore the proposed football fan ID card. And it should be said, it's organisations such as the Football Supporters Association and their forebears that put a stop to that nonsense. But at one point, it was being suggested that fans would have to actually have an ID card before being allowed to enter a stadium. And David Evans was a pioneer of that scheme. Yeah, so in general, Luton not liked, but of course they've been on a massive journey since then. They've gone out of the league, they've gone out of business. They had to get an ex-TVAM presenter to come and rescue them. That's how bad things got. And they're now partially fan-owned and a very, very, very different situation. In fact, there's a glorious story about the revival of what is a very difficult part of the country, it should be said, Luton. And there's a lot going on there, and that's reflected in the revival of their football club. And they've got hardly any money, and but they run themselves properly, and they've got one of the lowest wage bills, but they still run themselves properly and sustainably. And you want to see clubs like that do well, even if they are Luton.
Yeah, I think they have suffered enough. I mean, if 30 years of purgatory going down through the divisions, they had three relegations in a row, didn't they? Given the journey they've been on, they can come back. All is forgiven. Lest we forget, they were Eric Morecambe's team as well. So they have some positivity on their side as well, don't they?
This can't be forgotten. You're quite right, yeah.
And friend of the show, David Icke's team as well.
Friend of your part of the show. But they still haven't got that place yet. They've, mind you, all they've got to do is get a win against Reading in the last game of the season. And they should do that because Reading are toilet. But the playoffs in the Championship, they're shaping up pretty well. The only one we know who are definitely there are Huddersfield. They're in the playoffs. Forest can still snatch the automatic spot. And Sheffield United and Luton, yeah, they've just got to see it out. They've just got to hold off Middlesbrough. So there's going to be some jeopardy on the final weekend of the season there. But at the top, Fulham, who have been leading the way all season, absolutely tearing apart, scored over 100 goals this season. And they're going back into the top flight. Jan, and how long are they going to stay there for?
One season.
Could you imagine if you're a Fulham fan and your best mate was a Norwich fan? Every season you say, oh, it'd be great if we play your lot next season. No, they're like constantly passing each other in the corridor, aren't they?
They're the football club equivalent of the Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard dilemma. Can't play in the same division together. It doesn't work.
I think it's been about 4 years since they were both in the same division as each other. I suppose, really, I mean, like Fulham, no matter how well they've done this season, any bookmaker is going to put odds on them going down. What do you think, Terry? It's going to be Fulham who are going to be odds on, because they always seem to go down, don't they?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I suppose the deciding factor is likely to be Mitrovic, isn't it? If Mitrovic only scores half the goals that he's in the Premier League that he scored in the Championship, then Fulham will stay up.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, isn't it? Will that actually happen? Will Mitrovic be able to replicate his Championship form in the Premier League? The answer is no. Will he be able to partially replicate it? That is the actual question that we need the answer to. I mean, because he holds the key, I think. I would imagine they'll do some strengthening, but they've done that before. And sometimes these things are just written in the stars. For all of us who support Premier League clubs, who always start the season looking over their shoulder, looking to the bottom three, thinking, we did well last season, but we could still be relegated this season if we had a bad start. We see Fulham coming up and we say, you know, welcome, lads. Welcome. That's going to come back and bite me right on the arse next year.
Oh, yes.
we're going to get Archie on here.
Yes.
To sit here and remind me of it.
Yeah, I'll just say, well, Archie, here's some audio we made at the end of last season when Fulham came up.
No, we should get Archie to read it in like a red leatherback book in front of a roaring fire and just read it back word for word to Terry.
And he'd do that. He'd totally do that.
Yeah, oh no, he would definitely do that, yeah.
He's probably listening to this, drawing that all up now.
Yeah, he's waiting. Well, good. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I would not be devastated if Crystal Palace were to find themselves back in the Championship.
I know, but it's an awful season. You say that, you know, it's fine saying that at the end of a season and you kind of go, well, I get to see all these different clubs and the Championship's a good league. But actually, the torment that you have to go through to get to that point is just awful, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I won't be devastated. I might be traumatised, but I wouldn't be devastated. I believe I would recover.
Well rescued.
I suppose when Sunderland went down, they've been in the top flight for 10 seasons, hadn't they? They'd been firefighting for the last few of those seasons, hadn't they? Been just finishing just out of the zone. For Palace, God, how many seasons is this now?
I think it'll be 10 next year. Was it 2013 we went up, wasn't it? But it's been so long that I have forgotten.
You've forgotten what it's like. That's why you think it's okay down in the Championship, because you've got no reference point.
Yeah, concept, yeah.
You think it's all orange balls down there, don't you? And rattles. And
orange balls and no VAR.
Yeah,
yeah, I think it's a utopia down there.
I suppose as well, Norwich coming down, they're going to be favourites to go straight back up again, aren't they? Or are they this time? I mean, they haven't got Daniel Farker this time, but Dean Smith, I mean, it'll be good to take them up.
Yeah, and they've got their own Mitrovic, haven't they? They've got Timo Pukki, who loves the Championship.
Yeah, exactly.
So he'll just score for fun next season. And then they'll be back up again, passing Fulham.
You again. I reckon they should be deliberately drawn together in the League Cup or something, just so that they can play each other. Like you get the Red Bulls in World Cup draws for like where the host goes.
Okay, so this is how it is. League Cup, second round, okay? And it's Jermaine Genus who has to host the draw. And then out comes Fulham and say, right, well, we've got our first and only contingency of the draw is that we must now pull out Norwich.
Yeah, but he'd pronounce it full ham, wouldn't he?
And Norwich. You crack on, Jermaine. You're fine. Don't you worry about it. Pronounce those H's how you want it.
Yes. Fine. Of course, all the relegation issues in the Championship have been sorted as well. Derby, Peterborough and Barnsley all down. Derby, many might say, going down a season later than they should have done. They're lucky to be alive at the moment, aren't they? They're not living on borrowed time. Is there a rescue plan in the offing? Do we know?
They say there is a rescue plan in the offing, but they've been saying that for some months now, and it hasn't happened.
Yeah.
So, it needs to happen pronto. I mean, I think Wayne Rooney, he said after the relegation, said, look, whether I stay or not depends on whether or not the takeover happens. I think he'd quite like to stay there because I think he's, you know, he's got a nice comfortable camp bed in his office and isn't inclined to leave. But I mean, at the moment, I would imagine that he's done very well and people will be looking at him, I think, about the Burnley job and wonder whether or not that's got his name written on it, depending on what happens with Burnley at the end of this season. But to Derby's point, yeah, I mean, in theory, they should bounce back straight back up again. But I mean, they may not exist come summertime if this takeover doesn't happen. I would imagine, you know, whoever it is who wants to buy it is like just trying to get that CVE down to the most favourable terms as they possibly can before completing the takeover. But again, it all depends on who is going to be the new owner. What kind of an individual are they? What kind of human being are they? Are they there to represent the best interests of Derby County, or are they there, you know, with a view to maybe flipping that club and making a bit of money? So,
well, despite the trouble they've had off the pitch, the number of points that were taken off them, to finish the season with 34 points, I mean, that says a lot about what Wayne Rooney can do. I think it would be good to see, hopefully, I mean, it would be awful if Derby were to disappear. That would be, we talked about clubs going out of business last week. We're talking about the gap that would leave in the community. That's huge. I mean, that's a major city without a football club. That would be massive. Hopefully, they'll sort out the matters in terms of ownership, and Rooney will stay there and do really, really well. Then he can, you know, he can build on that and continue with Derby and do something. He could be a real legend there, actually have earned his stripes, won't he? And then can go on and take a big job rather than just being dumped in it, which I think can really ruin managers. Having said that, I spent the entire preview saying Frank Lampard was a man who was promoted well above his station, and then he went and masterminded a win on Saturday, which I said was never going to happen in a million years. So what do I know?
Well, Chelsea were in the flip-flops anyway, so yeah.
No one saw that coming.
No.
Yeah, we'll need a few more of them to be convinced that that's got anything to do with the manager rather than the players.
Yeah, I agree.
We might
I agree.
Be thinking that we need to get ourselves out of this, lads.
But League One next season potentially could have some very big clubs in it, couldn't it? If Wednesday and Sunderland contrive not to go up, you've got both of them. You've already got teams like Bolton and Portsmouth and Derby in there as well. There's a lot of teams that have spent a few seasons up in the Premier League, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And don't forget Charlton in there as well.
Yeah.
So
it's a big club.
They're a big club to us for obvious reasons. I think it's a good league. I mean, I want to be out of it. But apart from maybe the COVID season, I don't think Sunderland have had an awful time in there. I really don't. I think it's been quite an interesting period to witness as a supporter, and generally our time in there has been quite positive. It is time for us to get promoted now, definitely. And if we don't do it in the playoffs, then hopefully we'll finish strong next season. But yeah, to your point, Graham, there's going to be some big teams in there. Aren't Forest Green coming up?
Exeter are coming up and Forest Green.
Forest Green, that'll be interesting to see them up there, won't it?
Yeah, they're a funny club, Forest Green, aren't they? Because they're owned by this geezer who has this company who does all the sustainability stuff, and like their ground is like fully sustainable. And I think that what he does is that I think he uses the ground and he uses the club as a bit of a test case for his company's products and services and stuff like that. There's a few raised eyebrows about Forest Green. In one hand, it's like carbon neutral, sustainable football stadium. But like in many ways, they're just another rich man's toy. You know, I think about them. I think about Salford City. I think these are. I would rather see clubs like Exeter City get promoted, who've got like fan ownership, and then rather than a bunch of rich guys who think, well, let's buy a football club and see how far we can take it.
Yeah, Dale Vince owns a sustainable energy company. There's a lot of fan criticism of him because all the food there is plant based, isn't it? All these like football scran accounts moaning about not being able to get decent pies and things like that, isn't it?
I think the criticism is a little bit more sophisticated than that.
No, but I think for many people, that's it. I don't know enough about what Dale Vince's business model is or what he has planned for Forest Green, whether or not it's just really as a vehicle to market his product, or whether he really does think having a sustainable football club, which is no bad thing at all to have someone like that in the league set up. But hey, Exeter are top at the moment, so we can be happy for Gary.
Oh yeah, absolutely overjoyed for Gary. And just generally speaking for Exeter, they're a proper football club. Traditional football club, and it's good to see them get promoted finally.
Now, one thing that did catch our attention this week regarding the EFL was the fact that they will be holding discussions during the summer as to whether or not to get rid of the Saturday 3 embargo. Jan, do you want to give us some details about this?
Yeah, so, I think you've described it beautifully, Graham, as is your way. So they're going to meet and decide whether it's something that they can make happen. There are dissenting voices, as you would imagine, because it's quite a contentious subject. The way that the EFL clubs managed to try and monetize the fact that the clubs were still playing, but you couldn't play in front of fans, and they used the iFollow service, which, for those of you who don't know, is a service that supporters of clubs can use to watch their team, providing it doesn't cross with the Saturday 3 embargo or games that are already on live and things like that. So it's a pretty good service and got a lot better over the COVID period. Because I used to watch the Sunderland games, and there was like one camera, no replays, no commentary sometimes. They'd kind of tied up with local radio commentaries with some sync issues, and so it was rubbish, but at least you got to see your team play. And they got a lot better, and it meant that the clubs were actually getting some revenue during those dark times. I've watched about 7 or 8, so it's cost me like £80. Because it's £10 a pop, but I've got to see Sunderland play, and you know I can't be the only supporter of a club that doesn't live anywhere near the club that he supports for whatever reason. The Championship clubs get a lot of airtime because they're on Sky a lot, but lower leagues get very little coverage, and the highlights package is restricted to a few seconds snippet on Quest on a Saturday night. So I think I'm all for it. For very selfish reasons, but I think that if it doesn't happen in this round of talks, I think this is something that's going to snowball and will happen eventually. I know they've got to tick boxes amongst themselves. They've got to get approval from UEFA to allow that to happen as well. But I think it'll be good for the clubs. And I don't, and this is the big argument, isn't it? Is it going to have a material impact on attendances? Personally, I don't think it will. If you're a fan of a football club and you would normally go along, there's no better experience than going to watch your team play and sitting on the sofa watching a subpar production. It's never going to be the same. It's never going to feel the same.
Perfectly simple explanation there of what the whole plan is. But there's not a simple answer to this question, is there, whether or not they should do it? Because for different clubs, it's going to have more of an impact than others. For Sunderland, for instance, they've got loads of fans. They've got fans spread out throughout the country as well. So something like the iFollow service can be very, very useful for them. And of course, they could still have that and still have 20,000 plus turning up at the stadium as well. How about smaller clubs? Are they going to go for this, or are they going to be the ones to be concerned? Do you see this as being something for the bigger clubs are going to try and push, and the smaller clubs are going to be dragged along with them? Or do you think the smaller clubs will be the ones who will be against this?
Yeah, I'm having difficulty seeing what would be in it for the smaller clubs without being able to demonstrate to them that their attendances won't be affected by breaking the embargo. Because we don't genuinely know whether or not they won't be affected by breaking the embargo. You could say that the smaller clubs, they have very, very loyal local fan bases who support the club through rain or shine and will go anyway, irrespective of whether or not, you know, the game is available via iFollow. You could make the argument that given the choice between paying, let's say for the sake of argument, £30, that you would still probably pay that £30, or you'd buy your season ticket at the start of the season and go to the game rather than sitting at home and watching it on the television, even though actually the latter option is much, much cheaper to do so. I think you could probably make an argument that that would be okay. And clubs that might well argue and say, well, we won't necessarily be able to get new fans in because people will be able to watch it on the television. And say, well, how successful has a club been in attracting new fans into the stadium and to the match day experience anyway? So what difference does it make? But equally, you can flip it and just say, well, you know, we need people not just paying for their season tickets, paying to go through the turnstiles. We need them buying the pies. We need them buying pints at halftime. We need them spending revenue. Anything that jeopardizes that fragile income stream that it is, you know, is something that should be opposed. And you can completely understand that point of view. I think the way forward will be to do some tests. I think that rather than a full lift of the embargo, perhaps there's some wisdom in doing some trials. Take a handful of games and see what happens, and may or maybe come up with some kind of, dare I say it, some kind of equal division of revenue across the entire league, so everybody gets an equal part of the profit. Maybe that's something that would be a good thing, an egalitarian thing, to act in solidarity. I don't think it would mean that the bigger clubs would be that much out of pocket, but it might also address some of the concerns of the lower league clubs.
I don't think that the bigger clubs would do this. I mean, it would be a revenue stream, and you have to take something out of this, because they'll make a lot of money out of this, clearly, because they've got a lot of supporters everywhere. But the bigger clubs that are getting 20 plus 30,000, you know, outside of the Premier League and even the Championship, you like, will still get those fans in any way, and this would be a little bit of extra revenue for them, really. But there is some kind of attempt to get to that, Terry, not to the full kind of sharing of revenue, which I think would be a wonderful idea. But the I think it's the first 500 tickets for the iFollow that are sold by the away team automatically goes to the home team to make sure they don't lose out on away tickets, which I thought was a really novel way of doing it and pretty cool, really. So, yeah, they need to find a way to do it. Quite how they're going to make that happen, I don't know. But I think it would be good, like I said, especially for supporters of teams in League One and League Two, because they never get to see their teams other than actually going there. And that's not always possible for everyone. And in fact, I would say there's a lot of supporters that would be giving money to their clubs, smaller clubs as well, that would never get to see them. You know, I used to work with a guy who was a Crewe fan. When's he going to see Crewe play? He lives in West London. You know what I mean? It's so difficult for him, and he'd probably pay for his season ticket. You know, other friends that support other clubs outside of the Premier League and the Championship have said similar things. There are drawbacks, clearly, and it will hurt some clubs, clearly. But I think they've said as well that if anybody wants to opt out, and you can opt out on a game-by-game basis, they'll make that possible as well. So nothing's off the table, according to the article I read today.
Well, Terry, does that work? Does that work if you give a partial removal of the 3 p.m. blackout? Because then you've got clubs being able to opt in or opt out if they want to. But as soon as you lift the embargo, it's lifted, isn't it? That's just saying whether or not they want to have their games on pay-per-view. Once that 3 p.m. embargo's gone, it's gone, and you'll be able to put anything on at 3 o'clock, won't you?
If EFL apply to UEFA and say, we want to lift the embargo, then UEFA will say yes, because why wouldn't they? They'll say yes. But does that mean that other football matches can be shown? No, I would imagine that it's not, because apart from anything else, the Premier League still operates the embargo and they still play at 3 o'clock. I'm not seeing any possibility of any kind of contamination, if that's what you're asking about. I think that this is just really only going to end up with being iFollow. I mean, if you're talking about it being the thin end of the wedge, then yes, then that is definitely something to think about. And then, you know, so those of us who follow foreign leagues and would quite like to watch, you know, Bundesliga on a Saturday afternoon on their tellies, but there's only about five of us, so it's not really that much of an issue. I'm serious, there's about five of us.
I suppose what I'm thinking about is, right at the start of the season, Cristiano Ronaldo's first game for Manchester United was a Saturday three game. And there was a lot of discussion then about why isn't it being shown, especially having the last couple of seasons where we've had blanket coverage of all of the games because of the fact that we had restricted attendance or zero attendance for games. And so all the games were being shown. And there was a lot of talk saying, well, look, why have we gone back to the old way? This is the new way of doing things. They're watching the game on demand. Do you think Man United fans will say, if Sunderland fans can watch Sunderland play at 3 o'clock, why can't I watch Man United play at 3 o'clock?
It's an interesting point, but yes, can't look at it any other way than that. I mean, for them, in fact, for the Premier League, that would make so much more money because it's such a market that people want to see. I think they do really well. Manchester United have got fans all over the place. And that's not just because, you know, the tired cliche that, you know, everyone lives in Surrey and stuff like that. You know, people have had to move away from Manchester and can't get to see their club. Saturday 3 was there to preserve the sanctity, if you like, of the 3 o'clock kickoff, because that's what was always happening. But we've moved away from that. It's been watered down so much over the years, isn't it? You know, you have games at lunchtime, you have games at tea time, you've got a couple, two or three games on a Sunday. There's games on all across the week, even on Thursdays. There's games. Who would watch football on a Thursday?
Well,
exactly. West Ham fans. So, yeah, I think they should just tear it up. That's let the market decide.
Oh, blimey.
Here we go. Here we go.
That was a callback to last week.
It was indeed. It was indeed.
Sorry, you've lived in Surrey for too long, my friend. Too long.
That's
take
not
a break.
What I think, obviously.
Well, let's go to Sussex then and get an opinion. Terry.
yeah. Tory West Sussex.
Yeah. I mean, things have changed since COVID, I suppose, but there is still always, I think, an opposition from fan group about getting rid of Saturday 3, because I think most fans believe that television has far too much influence in football anyway, especially with moving kickoffs at a very late date. The head of the FSA, Malcolm Clark, has said that he saw no reason to change it. So do you think that getting rid of the embargo can actually be better for fans in that it can lessen the number of kickoff changes because you don't have to move a game from 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon because you can watch it on the telly?
I don't necessarily see it like that. I think that because there's different reasons for moving kickoff times around because also that it plays in with TV audiences and optimal peak time TV audiences. And the 4:30 on the Sunday is the golden slot. You know, they always put or try to put their best possible game in that slot because it's the one that garners the most viewers, because that's usually traditionally when households have stopped for the weekend. They've had their lunch and they've done everything else and they sit down and they flop and they fall asleep in front of the telly. So it's bound up with that. So I wouldn't necessarily feel that an embargo bust would change that side of things. And I've got a lot of sympathy for the FSA's view. I also recognise the fact that guys like Malcolm Clark and people in the FSA have thought about this for probably a lot longer than I have done, are much closer to the clubs than I am. And that this is their considered view, I respect that. And I think that that's something that we need to think carefully about those of us who are, you know, who like to record podcasts. And we do think about the game an awful lot, but, you know, we don't always necessarily see the other perspectives. And, you know, this could potentially be disastrous for football clubs if it's done badly. And so it is something that needs to be, you know, we need to be very careful before making a decision about this. It's one thing to have an opinion. It's another thing to make a decision. And that's why I feel that the best thing to do would be to try and collect some data. Half a dozen games over the course of a season, relax the embargo and see what happens.
Mm.
There's a golden opportunity for a cooperative business model to emerge from iFollow, an opportunity for an egalitarian, equal sharing business for the EFL to have so that all of the EFL members get the same slice of the pie. I mean, it's naive for me to say this, but it doesn't mean it shouldn't be said, and it didn't mean it shouldn't be something to hope for. If the prevailing view is over time that actually the embargo is a thing of the past, if yes, all these shrill Manchester United fans who are jumping up and down because they can't get to watch their latest new signing because he's making his debut on a Saturday 3, if they finally win out, then this is how I would, you know, if I was the FSA, if I was Malcolm Clark, I would perhaps look down that road and say, well, look, if you're going to do this, then let's do it properly. Let's not be like corporate and capitalist about it. Let's come up with an egalitarian model where we share the revenue equally amongst all of the clubs. And I think that that's something that I would look at. But most critically, let's gather the data. Let's do this, lift the embargo, see what impact it has. Do it at various points of the season. Maybe do it for two seasons at exactly the same dates so that we can see and try and make some kind of comparison. That's what TV people do. They look at the ratings and then they judge and see what happens. So let's look. We've got no data at all about this. The only data that we have, it goes back to the 1960s. I was just sitting here thinking, back in the 1970s, Graham, you might remember this. Yeah, and you won't. But on Grandstand in the 1970s, they used to show the second half of a rugby league game Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Only the second half. I don't know why they didn't show the whole game. Probably because they were too busy showing motocross from Buxton Park or something like that.
They needed something to go up against the wrestling, didn't they?
They needed something to go up against the wrestling. And now, obviously, rugby league is a different sport, but it is a brand of football that appeals to a very, very similar TV audience base. And they did that week in, week out. That was back in the 1970s, and I'm not conscious of there being any concern about that. Obviously, there was nothing they could have done because rugby league is completely different. But beyond that, we've got no data. So I feel that if this is something that people want to do, I want to look at, then let's experiment first and find out. If it turns out that there's a huge plummet in attendance figures, then we stop, absolutely. Of course we do. But let's find out.
I wonder, I'm just throwing this idea out about what possible things could be pushing clubs to go for this. This season has seen, well, ever since the end of lockdowns, non-league football has seen huge gates, huge increase. Certain clubs have seen double, triple the amount of fans coming through the turnstile. We're seeing gates of over 1,000 at step three regularly now, which is amazing. Is there something in the back of their mind and thinking, all the time our fans are going to watch a non-league side when we're away is money we're missing out on? Do you think that that's another thing as well? Is that to try and get more fans back to them rather than them going off to non-league? What would you rather be doing, Jan? Would you rather be going to watch the Leaf or sat at home watching one camera I follow of Sunderland?
Well, I mean, you know what the answer is to that, because I'm also a supporter of Whiteleaf. I don't just go there because it's my local team and something to do on a side that it's actually a team I follow. But I don't know whether the league clubs would be looking at that and going, well, there's some revenue we're missing out on. I think that they'd be looking at the potential of selling access through iFollow and saying that there's a revenue stream we could be going for. I don't know whether they'll have thought about it that far down, but that, well, why not? Why wouldn't they? I suppose that, you know, these are businesses. They would look at revenue opportunities and go, well, look, there are people we could flog this to. So I suppose where we're going with this is that if, let's say, Terry's trial works out, it gets rolled out, and it's all fine for the league clubs, but what happens to the non-league clubs?
Well, yeah. Terry?
What happens to the non-league club? Yeah, from the EFL's point of view, obviously that's where we don't care that much. But it's a good point, because this, I think, is something that you could show to the lower league clubs and say, well, do you have fans who support more than one club? They support your club. They go and see you when you're at home, and then they'll go to their nearest non-league club while you're away. Does that happen? And if so, will you be able to snaffle up some? But I mean, again, really, I suspect that it wouldn't work. One, I suspect you're talking about hundreds at the most that you might be losing, in quotation marks, and maybe 5% of those might buy iFollow, because as someone who was recently involved in subscription video on demand publishing, the conversion rate is between 2 and 3%. So it's pretty shit. So it'll be a bit higher for football, because football has, it's not just a question of, you know, direct to consumer sales. This is there's a different relationship between football clubs and supporters, but it's still not going to be a massive conversion rate. So that's something else to think about in all of this as well. Is it some kind of response to an unquantifiable existential threat, Graham, though? Is this the rise of non-league football after COVID, and that perhaps a feeling from the EFL that they are losing revenue, they're losing fans, and particularly kids, to non-league? Now, my where I'm down here, we've seen some big-ass attendances down here in Sussex. It's an absolute non-league hotbed, believe it or not, down here. And that's not just because we've got a thriving Premier League side here who play in Falmer. You may have heard of them. But, you know, Worthing,
yeah,
get over 1,000. And they are Isthmian League. They're Isthmian Premier. They've just gone up, but they're Isthmian Premier. That is pretty amazing. Shoreham had their highest attendance. Shoreham went to Seaford and there were 500 at Seaford for a playoff game. You know, if you follow your non-league at that step, these are high attendances. And the thing looking at Worthing is what they've been able to do is they've been able to engage with families and their kids. And they've got their kids in, probably going in there, playing a bit of football and aligning themselves to the club and following the club. And if that's something that's happening elsewhere in the country, and there's no reason to assume that it wouldn't, I mean, it's down here, you know, people are quite well off, so it's not always going to be the same, you know, in other parts of England. But if there's a critical mass of non-league clubs who are not just got greater attendances, but also got that generational factor, got the kids coming along and actually aligning themselves to a non-league club rather than to their local lower league club, then that is something to be concerned about. And I think also you just have to bear in mind, yeah, COVID was a game changer. I mean, like, you get to watch your football on the television at 3 o'clock. And once you've done that, it's hard to roll back from that without appearing to be sort of like small C conservative and intractable.
well, wouldn't it be great if we could watch a game at 3 o'clock this Saturday? Well, we can't. But what we can do is we could get up early and watch a big blue. We could watch Sydney FC versus Melbourne Victory on Saturday morning, or finish off on a Saturday night with Betis versus Barcelona. Terry, that'll be a good one, won't it?
That'll be a top-class game.
Yes, I'm talking about our weekend box set. And the weekend box set this week will be bookended by the aforementioned League One playoff semi-final first legs. Friday night, Sunderland versus Sheffield Wednesday, Stadium of Light. Packed house, should be brilliant, that one. Another 5-0?
No, it will be a packed house, definitely. There'll be high 30s, and that means thousands rather than just. I think both teams will probably play it quite safe in the first leg. Sunderland need to get something from it because they don't want to go and get a hiding down in Hillsborough. Like I said, it's going to be a good one for the neutral. I am going to bloody hate it.
Also on Sunday, you'll be able to see a very well-attended non-league match because Wrexham play Stockport County on Sunday lunchtime. The celebrity-owned Wrexham trying to snatch away Stockport's top place. But that one should also be great. And if you want to see what we think of those games, then take a look in our weekend box set. Now, how you do that is you go to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and sign up for it. Or if you wait till Friday afternoon, it'll be there on our blog and you can read what we think of the 7 games you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter at Sound of Football, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
You've really joked yourself down a cul-de-sac here, haven't you, Terry?
I'm just warming myself up, Jan. I'm just warming myself up.
I know. I'm merely assisting you in that. I'm your fluffer, if you like.
And I'm very, very grateful. Very grateful.
What I should have on my Twitter bio. One of the voices on the Sound of Football, Terry DeFellin's official fluffer.
Pod fluffer.
Pod fluffer.
It should be said.